ask me what.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. Her name is Leslie Patterson. We're brought to you by try-palooza.com. Coming up on Friday, February 20th, Saturday, February 21st, BMC demos, sup demos from Xterra, Q&As with the biggest name in endurance sports, expo, clinics, and our dinner on Saturday night. And Leslie Patterson has been there dropping F-bombs in the past.
Brilliant.
And she will be there again this year. We will keep a muzzle on her.
I will. Yep. Yep. Well, I'll try.
Yeah, you'll try. You'll try to get there. And we're also brought to you by Core Sports, the very best in women's active wear, head sweats, and Function Smart Physical Therapy. Leslie, our next guest. He is the professor of health and exercise science at San Diego City College. Plus, he does everything with the track club. Plus, he does a rock and running program. Plus, he does a dirt duck series. Plus, he does a winter series. Mr. Paul Greer and four-minute miler.
Thank you, Bob.
Pretty much anything and everything to do with running in San Diego. He is the man. How you doing?
Just wonderful. And thank you so much, Bob and Leslie, for having me on the air tonight.
It's
truly a pleasure and privilege. I always love coming on the air and being with you and just talking shop.
And just chatting.
And just chatting, of course. Yeah. So it's just great.
So state running in San Diego, pretty good. Then you have a big cross-country event this weekend, right, in Boulder?
Yeah, we did. It was the actual national championships and world qualifying for world cross championships.
Yes.
They're going to be in Gaying, China in March. And Chris Derrick was the overall males winner.
Yes.
And it's interesting, the state of cross-country right now at the world level. It's kind of declining a little bit.
Is it?
It is. Just about in 2013, they actually moved it to every other year for World Cross because they couldn't get enough people to bid for the Worlds.
Oh, interesting.
Because it costs about $3 million, to believe it or not, to put a bid together and do that.
For World Cross.
For World Cross. We're not talking about World Track here.
No, we're talking Cross.
World Cross.
Yeah, and what's so expensive?
Well,
it's probably rights fees.
Yeah.
It's IAAF.
Yeah. I'm going to have to tell you.
Yeah.
I know there's a little controversial saying this, but it's bringing all the IAAF execs in and supporting them for the week that the Worlds is. That's costly.
You're bringing guys in blazers.
Yep.
And they're bringing those blazers with, and they want those things to be pressed, bringing all their friends and relatives.
That's exactly right. And it adds up.
You know what's interesting to me is, as much we love cross country, right? It's the best.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. But every year when I'm doing my endurance awards and trying to get video, you'd think that the best video would be from cross country, right?
Yes.
It's impossible to find really good coverage. I mean, Foot Locker does better coverage than what you see around the world.
No question about
it. So I know Sebastian Coe's been talking about getting cross country into the Olympics,
which I think
is sort of the jump start that we need for that sport right now.
That's right.
Think?
No, definitely. Most definitely. I think it needs to hit the Olympic level to get this kind of sponsorships and the kind of just the support of the sport itself and people coming to do it.
Yes.
Because cross country is somewhat viewed in this country as something that it's a precursor to track and field.
Right.
Let's do cross country to get the strength and then everything else, and then we're going to do the real sport, which is track and field.
Right.
And at the world level, obviously, it's a big deal. But it doesn't get the traction in the world level unless it is an Olympic sport. So I most agree with you. And the problem with this bidding process is now what's happening is only the oil countries are affording this kind of bids.
And they're not doing it because it's making money for them. They're doing it because they're trying to get people to their countries.
Exactly. So you got these ungodly locations where temperatures are in the mid-90s, and it's not that great.
Courses are kind of...
They're just
bizarre.
Making them up.
They make them up as they go along.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, China obviously can do a great job next month about that. You know, another thing about World Cross is that the Europeans industry, and Leslie, you know this because you've got great cross country background.
Yeah.
They're pulling out. They're pulling out of that world level.
Are they?
They really are because they're just tired of getting their butts kicked by the Ethiopians and Kenyans.
Wow.
Interesting.
And is that generating sponsorship, Bob?
Well, and so basically they're going to put money into track and field where they can get a return.
Right. Exactly. Or European championships.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay, so they're going to send their
track
teams.
Track and field, not cross country. Or cross.
Well, no, European cross.
You're in cross, okay.
Yeah, so they'll still stay in the sport of cross country. They'll still have some sort of a championship, and they'll build that, and the sponsors will be behind it. But they really only want to see Europeans go against Europeans.
They don't really want to see the Kenyans.
Yeah, unless you send a real competitive team.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get their butts kicked there, and then what did they come back to? Basically, a waste of money and send their team out there. And
how does it change things with, you know, we had, I think, you know, one of the Kenyan guys and gals has gone positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have been sort of suspecting for a number of years that a lot of those athletes might not be clean.
That's right.
Will that change things if they're doing more drug testing and all of a sudden you don't have the dominance of the Kenyans and Ethiopians? That could help cross country.
Yeah, of course. No question about it. I think it plays things into a level playing field.
Yeah.
And then things can be a little bit more competitive because it's getting kind of crazy, you know, and the athletes, you know, it's kind of an unfair advantage for those who are taken, obviously, who are clean. And it's more prevalent in these countries now, unfortunately, because quite frankly, the testing in our country is very, very good.
Yes. And the testing in third world countries. The guy who's running the team is the one who's doing the testing.
Exactly.
And they're not submitting forms like you would be if you're part of a USA Triathlon or Scottish Triathlon, where you have to put a form out every day where you are, every minute of
That's
every
exactly
day.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, the stakes are so high, you know, for these athletes living in these countries quite often in terms of a way to get out, and it's kind of...
Yeah.
You know, it changes, right? It changes what sport means.
Sure.
It becomes less about, you know... Let's just get out there for the passion, and it's more about this is a viable career,
and
this is a way out. So you know, it's definitely changed that.
It has, and it's a shame because where you're from, Leslie, you know, Great Britain, England is the
country
who
capital.
Started cross country.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so for them not to go to a Worlds, you know, that's a shame. It's a terrible shame because they need to be at the world level.
And it seems like they would want to be exposed to that level of competition, right? Because it's only going to up their game, you know, and build a bigger depth of talent coming through that's going to cross over into track and field as well.
You bet.
You know what's interesting is you think about it, when you talk about the purity across country, and I saw it when we go to Dirt Dogs events,
of course, yes.
So you could run, I could go to a run the day before and run 10-minute miles and be in the middle of the pack somewhere.
Yep.
And I go to a Dirt Dog race and run 8-minute miles and be in last.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and that can be intimidating for folks.
Yeah.
So you've got that sort of purity of cross country, and you come from fell running.
Right.
Where it's all about just the love of dirt and getting grimy. And, you know, and that was really the predecessor of Spartan Race, Tough Mudder, all that. And you'd think that that would catch a buzz, but I don't think there's been, people haven't made the connection between those events and cross country.
Exactly. And I think part of it too, at least in this country, United States track and field, it's all about recognizing the best.
Right.
You know, and although cross country zone comes in and everyone can come out for Dirt Dog Series and everything, as far as USATF is concerned, the governing body of the sport, they just want to recognize who's the best at the association, regional, and national levels.
Right.
I mean, that's what they're about.
That's what they're for.
You know, and that's what they're for. And USOC, obviously, is not making it easier because they're saying we're the medals, you know, at the world level as well. So, you know, it kind of creates that culture where, you know, people
are
based.
Everything's performance.
Yeah, it's everything's performance.
And your funding is based on that, too. If you're not producing, if we're not getting medals at Cross, they're not going to keep funding it.
They're not going to keep funding it. And I think that's what's happening in Europe.
Yes.
They're not funding these teams to go because, you know what?
They're not going to come back with
anything. They're not going to come back with anything. They're not going to come back with any hardware.
I mean, certainly in the UK, everything's lottery funding. You know, it's all government funded.
Yes.
And so if it's not an Olympic sport, you know, you don't get funded. It's
so cross-country doesn't get funded.
However, you then have to look at it and say, well, how do we grow the sport in general? Mm-hmm. How do we, you know, for instance, in triathlon, you don't get funded unless you're an Olympic, you know, drafting triathlete.
Right.
You don't get funded for long distance. You don't get funded for Xterra, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you see all these wonderful champions and you think they're inspiring the youth that are coming through.
Right.
So, you know, and therefore building the base of a sport.
Right.
So that's surely what it should be about, because the bigger the base, the greater likelihood you have of success at all different types of sport.
No question.
That means patience.
Right.
And that
don't
sometimes,
like that.
Yeah, no. And at the same time, you look at where the dollars are. Mm-hmm. The dollars are let's move over to the other side, the rocking and running.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Yes,
you've
got
a race that comes up, the Rock and Roll Marathon, and it's going into what year is
18th
it?
18th year. Yeah, Tim started that 18 years ago.
And 30,000
mm-hmm. oh, yes.
participants. And
that's right.
How many people will you'll start your program when?
Well, we started actually 6 weeks ago.
Oh, you've already started?
We did. We started
6 weeks ago for races.
Right,
wow.
Have you not heard the bullhorn? You know, Balboa Park?
Whatever, like Leslie. I love you, everyone.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I tell everyone I love them, and I mean it.
Yeah, I know you. I know you do. I see you every year when I was running Rock and Roll in my Elvis suit. I'd be like, I'll see him on Park Boulevard.
Yeah.
I'll see him along the bike path by SeaWorld there.
Yep.
I knew exactly where I was going to see Paul.
Yeah, I had five or six different locations. Yeah. You know? People wondered how I got over there. Oh,
I know.
Because I didn't have a car. I didn't drive.
Use your bike.
No, I ran.
Did you
I
really?
Ran in different areas. Yeah, I did.
So you basically ran a marathon.
Well, I ran about 16, 17 miles. I'd get around pretty much, you know. And you know, those were the days, though, when we're talking about when it was just a marathon.
Right.
Now with a half marathon, I kind of cheat a little bit. I start at 6, and then I head right over to Pershing. Because then I'll see the marathon. You know, so I'm only at two locations. Yeah. But they don't know that. They think I'm at 3 or 4 because they just see me, you know.
Exactly.
Well, no, they hear you.
They hear me. So how many folks are signed up?
500, close to 500. We're almost sold out. We're about 470 right now, and it's just been a great ride for the last 18 years. This was something that actually the founder of Rock and Roll is obviously
Tim Murphy,
and he actually gave me a call, you know, 18 years ago, and said, you know, We're for the charity, which is the, you know, the team and training folks. But, you know, locally we recognize, and it was his insight. It was great insight to
brilliant
see this.
Guy.
He was a brilliant guy. There's going to be people that are not going to want to do the fundraising, but still get the same benefits of training. Mm-hmm. And I want the Santa Cruz Track Club to be that group. So that's what happened. And it really just kind of, at the time, the track club just celebrated its 60th anniversary.
Yeah, right.
But 18 years ago, it was in really bad shape.
Yes.
The numbers were down below 150 when, you know, in the high years, it was 2,000.
Yes, yes.
And, but more concerned to me at that time, because this is my 30th year coaching the San Diego Track Club, so I've been around for a while. But what was more concerned is the morale. Mm. The morale was really down, and rock and roll kind of springboarded that.
No question
about
that,
and got it going, and then everyone got excited, and then obviously we got an instant 500 members that were new now to the track club.
Yes, who knew nothing about the track club.
Who knew nothing about the track
club. Never would have joined.
Exactly.
Never would have joined, never would have known.
Exactly.
And to a certain degree, the track club had become a little stodgy.
It
right?
did. It
had,
did.
Had
it
members
did.
Have been there a long time. They
it
didn't
did.
Understand any technology.
No.
They really weren't
they
looking
weren't
to
with
grow.
The times.
They weren't moving
mm-hmm.
with the times at all.
They were not.
But I can tell you this. When I came to the country some 12 years ago, you know, my first experience of sport was running in the Dirt Dog with you, Paul.
Yes.
You were an inspiration. I mean, you're the centerpiece of that culture.
Thank you.
And you're so welcoming.
Thank you.
So, you know, I mean, it's just amazing what you've done for the sport and what you continue to do.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, I just Bob was there. I just had a 50th birthday party, and I bought out the Belly Up Tavern, and then had a great time. And there's an opportunity when it's your birthday to kind of greet the crowd. And I actually said it to the crowd. There was certain decades of where I learned things about myself and my life, and I learned them when I turned 30. The importance of forgiveness and forgiving yourself, and then based on that. After forgiving, then you can love more. Mm. And that's what I learned when I turned 40, to love.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably what I've learned now that I've turned 50 is to serve. And the importance of serving and serving others and showing your talents and sharing your talents and your gifts, whatever those may be. Mm. Because I think that's what we're called in life to do. Mm. Forgive, love, and serve at the end of the day.
So, Paul, take me back. Growing up, where?
I grew up, actually, my parents are born and raised in Glasgow, Scotland.
Hey,
yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah.
We're connected. We're actually related, Bob. Did I not tell you that?
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Can you not tell? I'm
no,
like...
you guys, yes, I can tell. Paul played rugby, I know.
Yeah. So in order to have greater opportunities, my parents made a decision 2 weeks after they got married to move to America.
Yeah.
It was 1962. My dad landed on the day of the Cuban Missile Missile Crisis.
Oh, my God.
Which was many years ago. Yeah. Probably many of our viewers are going, Cuban Missile Crisis, what was that? But it was a big deal back in 1962.
It was. Yeah.
And my father's going, oh, what have I done? Running, you know, because you're thinking the world's going to end at that time. But it was a great opportunity to save money and get multiple jobs. And my parents worked really, really hard to really go back to the old country, go back to Scotland.
So they weren't planning to stay.
They were not planning to stay. And they landed in New York City. And that's where I was born two years later. So I was born in 64 in New York City. And then in 69, they got kind of stuck to their plan and went back to Scotland.
Wow.
But you know, it's true about life. You go somewhere, you go away. Mm-hmm. And then you come back, and it's not quite the same.
Oh, yeah.
You know, by then, one parent had died on each of my parents' side, and family dynamics were different, and mm-hmm. America...
It was starting to look better.
It was looking better. But they didn't want to go back to New York.
Right.
So they decided to go to the library and look up the Atlas, and they looked up, warm cities in America, and found San Diego, and that's where we ended up in 1972, and I've been here ever since.
And were you, did you grow up as a runner?
No. I actually was not much of an athlete, actually. I just kind of, skateboard around the streets in Solana Beach. I grew up in Solana Beach.
Oh,
I was
nice.
Kind of one of those privileged children. It was wonderful. I was living in Loma Santa Fe, that country club up there and everything. But my parents decided to put me in an all-boys Catholic high school.
Wow.
So I went to St. Augustine High School, all-boys Catholic high school here in North Park.
Yeah.
And the truth about Saints is because there's no girls, sports is a big deal.
Yes.
So you got to let that go, you know. You got to let something go, you know. You don't have the distractions of the girls or chasing the girls, you know.
Exactly.
So you have a lot of energy. So you put it out in the athletic field. And I tried out for different sports. Football got cut.
Yeah.
Soccer got cut. But they could take me in track, you know, and so I did it. And so, my first day, I'll never forget, at St. Augustine, I couldn't even do a jumping jack.
Oh.
And I had 100 boys around just laughing their heads off, you know what I mean, as far as I couldn't even do a jumping jack. But, you know, through the hard work and persevering and then just being part of that culture.
Yeah.
Where sports was a big deal. I mean, it really started with me wanting a Letterman jacket.
Of course.
You know what I mean? I mean, it starts as basic as that.
Yep.
To, you know, at the end of my career, I wanted to go to the Olympics. And it was a feasible thing. I went to the Olympic trials and had broken 4 minutes in a mile. So, you know, it's good to have goals. And that was my first goal. I wanted to go down that corridor with a Letterman jacket. But once you do that, then, I got to find something else to do.
Yeah.
I got to find something. So then you want to be the best in your school or the best in your league or the best in your county.
Sure.
And then I ended up at San Diego State, which at that time was the ninth best track and field school in the country.
Wow.
Who was the coach then?
Dixon Farmer.
Yeah.
And we had a mile relay of 305, 4x100 relay of 39 point, half miler, 146.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I walked into a dynasty there. And
what's your mile PR?
My mile PR was 359.
Yeah.
Wow. I did it. Yeah. But I actually have the school record at San Diego State.
Still.
Still. But that's what I was about to say. And it does actually draw some more discussion here is the state of Division I and what's going on with track and field programs. Because in 1991, they cut it. Back then, because of funding, it was a low time in the early 90s, economy-wise, just kind of what we went through, but not as severe. But why hasn't it come back? And here's 1991. We're now in 2015. The men's track and program hasn't come back. Well, since then, they added some Title IX rules where there's an equal amount of sports, sorry, men and women, equal amount of scholarships that will be offered to men and women. I'm all for Title IX. I don't want to be on the air here saying I'm not for equal amount of sport opportunities for men and women. But now I think we're going in kind of reverse discrimination in a way.
Yeah. Where there's more women's program than the guys.
Yeah, and more opportunities for the girls. I mean, a high school girl can probably get a scholarship in this country at a Division I school running 4:59, 4:58 in a mile.
Yeah.
You know, these days for a boy, they're going to have to run considerably a lot better.
Right.
4:10, 4:15 to get a scholarship.
It's interesting because I really experience now the lack of dedication in this sort of younger kids coming through, through into college as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like they're being given, there's an entitlement.
Yes.
And
amen to that.
Yeah, they're not prepared to really... bust their butts.
Mm-hmm. And they have to.
And they do. If they want to make it on the world stage, they really have to. And so, it's kind of catch-22. You want to give them opportunities, but at the same time, they have to learn to work for it.
That's right. There's no choice. If they're going to be at that level, Yep. They have to work hard, even at the national level. I mean, yep. the hard workers are the ones that they end up making it, and that's that.
So, Paul, talk a little bit about if somebody can people still sign up for the Rock and Roll?
Yes, definitely.
They go to Track Club website?
Yeah, they can go to www.sdtc.com.
Okay.
And on that site, there's a link that will say Rockin' and Runnin', and just click that link and it'll tell them everything about how to sign up. You know, the Rock and Runnin', we've had a wonderful ride these last 18 years.
Yeah.
But if I was to capture what our program's about, yes, they come to learn how to run a marathon, half marathon.
Right.
But the reality is, it's all about friendship.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all about community. Huh. And anything that's good in life, anything that's good that's out there is offering, whether you're training for the next triathlon or you're training for the next cross-country race or the next running race, if you're part of a community and you live in that friendship, you're going to return and come back and again and again and again.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that's what this program's about.
Do you get a lot of repeats?
We do. We do. We get a lot of people that want to come back for the friendship.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, because they know they can, just being able to know they're meeting these same people every Saturday morning.
Exactly.
Right, and going for a run and hanging out with each other.
Hanging out. We just had a mixer last night at Teal Leal's at the bottom of the hill, USD there.
Yeah.
Over 200 people showed up from our program, to just engage and everything.
Yeah.
And then as a coach, that gives me great delight because certainly my role is to train them and prepare them as best I can, impart the knowledge I know on them, maybe try to teach them as best I can in a large group setting, the most recent training principles. But what warms my heart the most is the relationships I see that develop and the friendships that grow from being a part of this program. My greatest, compliment came after year four, where a runner from the past in the program who had done year one, two, had done it, and I bumped into him at a car wash, and he says, "Hey, Paul, I just want you to know, I'm not doing marathons anymore. I've moved into the triathlon world, and
you went to the dark side,
yeah. And I'm doing some triathlons, but I want to tell you that my friends to this day are the friends I got from the track club.
See, that's cool,
and that's really that's really at the end of the day, that's what it's about. The goals, of course, are important.
Sure.
I'm not minimizing that.
Yeah.
But what sustains
it?
But that's part of the goal.
Yeah, you can't.
That's the reward you get out of this whole thing.
And I think you typified that there when you were talking about your goals as you grew up, how they started at a certain level and then they built and they built and they built, right?
Right, exactly.
It's the same for everyone out there.
Exactly.
You know, they rock up and maybe it's just to run a mile.
That's exactly
run
right.
Run 2 minutes,
that's
walk
exactly
2 minutes.
Right.
That's good enough, and then the next step, it's a 5K, then it's a 10K and on and on.
Exactly. And anybody in the listening audience here, anyone can, just set a goal and it could be just that simple.
Yep.
Sure. Running 1 mile just to be able to run a full mile, but you start with a walk run, 1 minute on, 1 minute off, and then what an accomplishment that is.
That's amazing.
And only about 23% of the country, our country, we're in a real alarming rate right now, with child obesity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We are the first generation where our kids are not maybe going to see.
They won't outlive their parents.
They won't outlive their parents. Right. And we hear about that. But only about 23% of the country is actually engaging in activities that are adequate for fitness and health.
Absolutely.
75% participate in some type of activity at least one time a year. But, the greatest motivation for exercise is enjoyment. So find a passion for what you do and then get out there and do it.
Move.
Whether that's walking, running, whatever else, or cycling or swimming.
So, Paul, his training, it's been 18 years. Has training changed that much? Has your program changed that much?
Not really. I think
a few more little Garmin stuff.
I think technology-wise, there's more tools that I think that are very different than, let's say, 18 years ago. Training principles are pretty much the same. I'm a coach that believes on strength equals speed. So the stronger you are, the faster you're going to be.
Yep.
So I'm big on lactate threshold runs, tempo runs, Jack Daniels, Joe V. Hill.
Yes.
Those great coaches of the U.S., they're kind of what they impart on the younger coaches and coaches like us. And but that hasn't really changed, it's just a matter of continuing on and just keep doing the same things.
Consistency.
How do you deal with, athletes that get injured? I think it's a big thing when people hop into the sport of running and they think, great, want to do a half marathon, want to do a marathon.
Sure.
And, 4 weeks into the problem, pulled calf, something like that.
Sure.
How do you deal with that?
Mm. As far as the rocking and running program is concerned, we have, obviously, it's about community. Mm-hmm. So we obviously, that also includes the physical therapy mm-hmm. side of things and the trainers on that side of things. So we have several different physical therapy outlets and things that come in. And what we do is we try to place these good people who get injured with these kind of support that they can get from outside. And in many ways, sometimes I can talk to them.
Sure.
You know, I think the best friend of a marathoner is a foam roller.
Yeah,
truly. You know, those tight hips lead to IT band, which is one of the most common injuries out there for marathoners and half marathoners. So, teaching them about some of the tools that are out there that they can do on their own. And then if need be, send them to the resources.
Right.
You know, where they can get the professional, opinions to get better.
And that's the thing. It's very overwhelming, right? You know, there's so many pieces of information out there. And,
exactly.
And that's what's great about you and your community is, you've kind of gone through all that and you've sifted it out. And here you go. Here's
one
a list
stop
of
shopping.
Things.
That's exactly right. And it's been trial and error over the years.
Yeah.
But we've kind of perfected to our key people.
Yeah.
And we ask them not to, obviously they're there for the business.
Sure.
But we ask them to do maybe kind of a discount for our runners.
Sure.
And then, it's that connections. And everything that we do with Dirt Dog or with Summer Nights or Rocking and Running, it's important to tie in that community and get everyone involved so they feel a part of it.
And they
feel like they're in it.
And speaking about that, the infamous Tuesday nights.
Yes, yes.
At Old Shakey's.
No, what
is
that?
With Mikey Rouse.
Yes, yes, yes. Eh? Of course, yes. We after Tuesday night, we end up at Shakespeare's Pub. We'll have a beer and
tell chips.
Yeah, and tell a lot of lies about our past.
That's right.
Exactly.
Nothing like it.
So, other things that are going on: Winter Track Series.
Winter Track Series just completed last week.
Nice.
We had a four meet series. We're going to build next year to another meet. And it offers people an opportunity of all comers, all levels, to participate in the wonderful sport of track and field.
Yep.
Later this summer, we'll have the Summer Night Series. And I oversee the winter and the Summer Night Series through the help of United States Track and Field.
Right.
And the Summer Night Series is the same kind of setup as the Winter Track Classic. We have four meets, and they're in the evenings, whereas the Winter Series is in the mornings.
Right, yeah.
The Summer Nights is in the evenings.
Uh-huh.
And what I did is, one thing that I believe that kind of kills, don't get me wrong, I'm the purist of track and field.
Yes.
I came through track and field. I could sit there for 8 hours and watch track and field.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize not everyone can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the community person cannot do that.
No. So this has got to be quick.
So it's got to be quick. And that's one of the things that kills the sport. And yet you can change some things to make the sport more appealing for the community and for the person. So what we did is we put it into, and Leslie, and you know this very well, the European Grand Prix schedule standard.
Nice.
Where you only have maybe five running events.
Yep.
And a standard, like 100 or 200.
Right.
It's the main core of a track meet.
Yep.
What? The sprints, the middle distance, mm-hmm. the long distance, the hurdles, and a long sprint.
Right.
And we just kind of, we'll switch up. We may have 100 one meet, then the next meet we'll have a 200.
Mm-hmm.
The next meet we may have a 800. The next meet we'll have a mile. The next meet we may have 3,000. The next meet we have a 5,000. And then we just have a three field event course, shot put, and high jump and long jump. And then people can come out, and it's all levels and all abilities. We make it very cheap. It's $5 to do an event. It's at ideal locations. Back in 2012, we had three Olympic qualifiers out of the Summer Night Series because they were looking for
places to run
fast. And we had two Canadians who ran under the Olympic standard. At our San Diego Summer Night Series at San Diego Mesa College.
Love
and that. But then at the same token, here we have a lady running 4:04 in the 1500, which is real world class. But then at the same token, we have little 3-year-old running a 50-yard.
Brilliant.
As an exhibition, and a little 70-year-old running his 200 meters, and everything else. And so it community.
Love it.
Friendship.
Inclusive.
Yep. And then they bring back the stars. I bring back our legends in San Diego. We have a lot of legends from Steve Scott to Meb Keflezighi to
Tom Hunt
to Tony Campbell to Willie Banks.
Yep.
And what I recognized really early on this Summer Night Series, we're into our sixth year this next year, but what I recognized really early is get these guys involved. Don't forget about the past.
Never.
Right.
Let's bring back the past. We bring these guys back at all these meets. We name one of the events after them.
Sure. Yep.
We let them come out. We introduce. We talk about their history, who they were.
Yeah.
We get them an opportunity so our young people never forget who was Steve Scott or Willie Banks or Tony Campbell was.
I love that. I really think that that's what I lacked as a youngster coming up, right?
Yeah.
Was the ability to talk to someone that had been truly successful, ask them about how they did it.
That's exactly right.
You know, because you don't have access to that now.
No.
You know, everybody is behind, you know, their Twitter accounts and their Facebooks, and you can't have a real conversation.
No,
and the number of times I've been out there in the community talking about what I've been through, and people are like, what, you go through that? And I'm like, of course I go through
that.
And empathy is the key. If they can say, well, hey, you know, gosh, you felt
exactly
like that,
right.
Then maybe if I feel like that, I can get through it too.
Exactly right. Exactly
so,
right.
You know, I mean, it's that's just so exciting that
it is
that you're doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Last year, we had the number one runner in 2012 in the 100 meters show up to run a 100, Carmita Jeter. You know, she's a silver medalist.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
she wasn't the top 100, but you get it. She was top U.S. runner for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She came out to run.
Yeah.
So the series
to go won some competition,
and they won and being ideal conditions.
Yeah.
So the Summer Night Series is really taking off nationwide. More and more people are recognizing this as a part of the country where they can go and take notice. And and really, it's grassroots at its best. Just like Dirt Dog, Dog Series is grassroots.
Yep.
Summer Nights, Winter Track Classes, grassroots.
Love it,
and it welcomes everybody. Come on out. Let's get fit. Let's get active.
Yep.
Because otherwise, we're just going to get worse and worse in this country, and we have to stop that.
Yep.
We have to and we got to get our kids more active.
Hey, Paul, thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
Thank
so people
you.
Can go to San Diego Track Club website and find out, sdtc.com.
Yes, for the rocking and running.
All right.
And then for Summer Nights, you can go to summernightstrack.com.
Okay, and Dirt Dogs is
and then
website.
DirtDogXC.com, which you helped us with that website, Bob. So,
exactly, yeah. So
yeah,
lots
definitely.
Of fun stuff,
a lot of fun stuff. And I just want to thank you both for having me on the air tonight.
No, no problems.
I wish everyone out there in the radio audience all the best with their future endeavors and goals.
And
go
every
get
one, every one of them, they'll be at Tripalooza coming up in a couple of weeks.
Amen to that.
Exactly.
Amen.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and listening to Babbittville. We have an interview that we taped a little earlier with Mr. Dean Karnazes that will be coming up shortly. We are brought to you by try-palooza.com coming up on Friday, February 20th, Saturday, February 21st. BMC demos, SUP demos from Xterra, endurance sports legends Dean Karnazes, who you're about to hear, Tim DeBoom, Ben Hoffman. And we'll have our awards gala on Saturday evening, the 21st. Go to try-palooza.com to check it out. Our other sponsors, Core Sports, the very best in women's active wear, head sweats, function-smart physical therapy. Leslie, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, pleasure. It's way past my bedtime.
No, never.
I hope you're impressed.
Dean Karnazes is coming up next. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Hold on. She is just a flirt. Joey slept Susan.